learning about a D-Star radio that he
we may have a couple candidates.
Okay, very good. Okay. Okay, so the way they requested the webinars, they wanted it in the two sessions. One was just the basics of D-Star, and then the other was its application to emergency communications. So what I have here is the presentation that was the introduction to D-Star. Okay, so what is it? Well, first of all, the acronym means Digital Smart Technology for Amateur Radio. The D-Star technology, if you will, was developed by the Japan Amateur Radio League. They're the ones who came up with the acronym D-Star. So we'll leave it at that. But the neat thing about D-Star is that, unlike our other modes that we're doing today with analog, 2 meter 440 FM, we can do simultaneous voice and data. And that's really the key differentiator of D-Star compared to the other technologies that we're used to seeing today. It also, the transmissions that we send out have a packet-like structure, which makes them a natural fit for routing information through computers, computer networks, and also linking things together through computer networks during your wireless network systems. One of the strongest points of D-Star, though, is that, as I call it, it's digital at the source, meaning from your microphone, your voice is immediately digitized, and it's only digital data that's going out over the air. Unlike, have you ever heard some of the people, have you ever listened in on like Echolink or IRLP nodes, and a person is actually driving around somewhere, they're hitting a repeater, you know, that is hooked up to an IRLP or Echolink node, and then they're going into the internet. So what do you have? You have the typical picket fencing, you get the scratchy noise, everything else, because essentially that link going in to the digital network starts off as analog audio. The advantage of D-Star is that your audio is digitized right at the source. Okay, so it's as good as it's going to get, if you will. Okay. The other advantage, and one of the key things that they wanted to do in D-Star, was to reduce bandwidth. It parallels efforts that are going on in the commercial emergency services, what they call APCO 25 market, if you will, to reduce bandwidth. Because they want to get more users in there. D-Star already took the lead to the maximum challenge, if you will, by going to 6.25 kilohertz channel spacing, right, which is the goal, the end goal, basically, that they have for the public service community. So they jumped right all the way down into that. Right now, you're starting to see some of the radios just now being transitioned in the public service end to 4.5 kilohertz spacing. So this is already an order of magnitude, or a multiple of that, if you will. One of the other things that's interesting, because again, remember, everything is digital transmissions, it has this packet-like structure, is that your call sign is also sent out every time you're transmitting, which also means you can do call sign-based routing. Right? Unlike a 2 meter FM, if you don't announce who you are, nobody has a clue, you don't write it down, nobody has an idea. Okay. Every time you transmit, you're sending your call sign, which is a very handy thing if you want to contact a specific station. You can also call CQ and talk to anybody you want, but the nice thing is that the call sign information is there, as is the information of the call signs of the repeaters that you're going through as well. Okay. D-Star can also operate standalone. You can do simplex communication, handheld to handheld, handheld to mobile. You can operate through a D-Star repeater just like any other analog repeater today. But the one key differentiator with D-Star, though, is that you can enable it as a gateway connection, and now you can start tying this digital repeater into the internet. And now you've greatly expanded the capabilities of the D-Star system. Okay. As I was saying, just to kind of give you a general idea, this isn't exactly the scale, but the impetus with D-Star was that by using the narrower bandwidth here, we could, if people start implementing more and more D-Star repeaters, we can greatly reallocate the spectrum, especially around here in the Washington area where 2 meters is precious. You know, if we could refarm a lot of the spectrum here, we could actually end up with a lot more repeater coverage, you know, than what we currently have. But that's a nice thing. If you look at D-Star, you can work within 6.25 kilohertz is the actual transmission bandwidth. You can do a 10 kilohertz channel spacing. Analog FM traditionally is about 15 kilohertz of occupied bandwidth. and the channel spacing, depending on some of the repeaters, what some of the repeater organizations do, 20 to 25 kilohertz channel spacing is actually a pretty typical number. So we have the possibility of actually greatly improving our spectrum utilization. Okay. You can, and I'll caveat this, put a little asterisk on here, you can actually plant a D-star repeater in between the allocations of two analog repeaters. Now, that said, that assumes that the analog repeaters can tolerate any close-in interference. Okay. So I'll caveat that. But there are places in the country where the D-star allocation of frequency for a certain repeater may be far enough away from some of the analog repeaters that adjacent channel interference is not as much of an issue. Or some of the analog operators are improving their allocation or their performance of their repeaters. But theoretically, anyway, you could put a D-star repeater right in between the existing allocations for analog repeaters. Or you could just get rid of an analog allocation and put two D-star repeaters in one analog allocation. So there's something to be said for that as well. Okay. So as I said, the D-star specification is an open protocol. It was written originally by the Japan Amateur Radio League, who then worked with ICOM in actually trying to bring this to fruition here. It's an open source design. There is nothing closed about D-star, and I'd say that's probably one of the misnomers about it, that people say, oh, it's a proprietary technology. It's not. There's nothing proprietary about the D-star form.
Technically, though, the encoding and decoding coding is proprietary.
I think you're going to get to that.
We're going to get to that, okay. And to that I always say, if you bought this computer, this has an Intel processor, which is a proprietary processor that runs on a Windows operating system that is a proprietary operating system. Okay. At some point, somebody owns something. Okay. You can find out more information. There is oodles of information out there. Just do Google searches on D-star, ARRL D-star spec, and that'll give you the translation that came from Japanese, was translated into English, okay, and you can read it. A little rough, but it's readable. So like I said, the one advantage with D-star is that you can do both voice and data simultaneously. Or you can also do data-only modes. All right. The 2 meter and 440 repeater, I'm sorry, the 2 meter and 440 radios that are out there today, they do the simultaneous voice and they do low-speed data simultaneous with your voice at 1,200 bits per second going in. The 1.2 gigahertz radios are the only ones that actually support a high-speed data-only mode that runs at 128 kilobits a second. Okay, I know in the Marine Corps Marathon, that is one of the key radios, if you will, that they're using there, that they can send a lot of data and files or whatever very rapidly. But the nice thing about this, you know, with the handheld is you can send low-speed data. And I'm going to talk about some of the applications for that as well. Also, sending your GPS location simultaneous as you're talking is another perfect example of where people are leveraging the D-star technology. Okay, if you wanted to take a step back, look at the guts of what's kind of going on in the D-star radio. There is basically a digital section that has just been added to the conventional analog FM transceivers that we've been using for years now. And I know this is a little bit of an eye chart here, but what you're seeing is basically just your voice comes in, gets digitized, goes into what we call this codec, which is the thing that is used basically for taking your digitized voice and just processing it to reduce the bandwidth. Then we go through and basically add in error correction, send it out over an FSK transmission here, just like you do for FM, and send it out. Then we just reverse the process coming back, just demodulate it, go through the reverse process for error correction, go back through that voice decoding, just turn the digital bit stream back into audio.
Oh, yeah, at least one. Thank you.
Okay, just turn back the digital bit back into analog audio and you listen to it again. So really what they've done is just taken the digital side and just married it up with a conventional analog radio. So kind of getting into the guts of it, this is an example again where we just digitize your voice going in, digitize the, or take the digital data and just generate the analog signal going back out. But this chip here is the heart of the D-Star audio. Okay, this chip is made by a company called DVSI, and the part number that hams are basing their design on is what's called the AMBE2020 vocoder chip. So that vocoder does this changeover basically from the digital stream, gets it formatted. But the important thing, and the key thing that's really improving the performance for D-Star, is that built into there is what they call forward error correction. You're actually taking that data stream in, adding in certain bits that help you ride through some of the dropouts and signals that you would normally have. So you actually get better performance, better fidelity or whatever, as opposed to just having, you know, the typical scratchy audio. I have an audio sample I'll try and play later here to give you an idea. But a comparison of this, and so Han just drove over to a spot and stopped, and he said, okay, I'm on D-Star, I'm going to switch over to analog FM. You know, you hear the kind of frying pan noise or whatever, and he switches back over. Well, it's the error correction that's really giving you that extra oomph. Okay. And after that, they just send it out over the air. But again, the one thing, too, that's key with D-Star is, remember, you can also have simultaneously they feed in this 1,200 bit per second data stream. And that's just being mixed into the data stream that's going out over the air. I'll point out, too, this AMBI chip is actually a very, very common chip. And the reason that ICOM and others chose this was, if you get into a lot of these really advanced technologies, a lot of companies, they want to sell intellectual property, and you pay a fortune for licensing fees or whatever. Well, the one advantage of this particular chip is they will sell you, in essence, a programmed chip for about $20 that already has all this stuff in there, and it gets you past all of these other goofy issues that you got to go through with buying licenses for intellectual property and all that. So that was one of the reasons that people have really gravitated towards this chip.
Yeah. How long do we think that chip's going to be around?
Actually, it's... Yeah, but actually the thing is, it's the code itself, okay, that is the proprietary part. They just keep porting it to the latest digital signal processing chip, and they basically just hard-code it into that chip.
And there is a group that's trying to do an open-source vocoder type chip. But as Mark has pointed out, it's a trade-off between that group is, there's a lot involved from what I understand, and I know about that much about this technology, and in doing a good vocoding thing. And that's another reason why ICOM went with that particular chip, because they are the leader. Yeah. That company is the one that does that type of work, and they do it extremely well. So as an amateur, you can get those chips essentially $20, maybe less. You can write to the company, they'll give you one for $20 or something. That's what a lot of people are doing that. So.
Yeah, they're constantly porting it to the latest hardware platforms or whatever, but basically it's the code, the programming is really the key thing, the chip itself, you know, whatever. It's also the same chip that's used in a lot of the satellite phones, okay, the Thuraya phones and other satellite-based services or whatever. And this chip is actually a sister to the same chip they use in the public service APCO 25 radio, which we'll talk about later.
So that 4800 BPS, is that 2 meter also?
2 meter, 440, and there is also at 1.2 gigahertz, they also do also a low speed simultaneous voice and data, or they do high speed data at 1.2 gigahertz.
So I mean that's you know, four times faster than what we're used to for a 15 gigahertz wide analog data stream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you can do a 9600 baud, you know, packet, okay, it's a little tricky, you got to have a radio really set up to do that, but if you're just comparing apples to apples, you know, and just starting off of just saying, well, the only thing I can do is plug into the microphone port, you're stuck with a 1200 bit per second packet radio. And that's actually one of the things that, you know, has been pointed out in the Marine Corps Marathon, is that they'd actually prefer to just get rid of all the 1200 baud packet stuff, just go to 9600 baud, or go to the ID1s for the high-speed data, because one radio and one antenna at 9600 bits per second is four times more effective than a 1200 bit per second radio. But again, the advantage with D-Star is, remember, we're doing voice and data, okay, as opposed to just voice or just data. Okay. So a typical D-Star repeater configuration now starts with a repeater controller, which is basically just the housekeeping circuitry that just keeps all these modules running. And then what they do is have these individual repeaters modules here that they then tie in together. So there's an individual repeater stack then for 2 meters, which has both voice and low speed data. This is one for 440. Then in the 1.2 gigahertz side, they do that same thing here with the 1.2 gigahertz voice low speed. And then they also do a separate stack here for doing the 128 kilobits per second. But the neat thing about this is having this common repeater controller is you can pass data and go from one stack and move it over to another frequency here. So you can come in 2 meters and go out 1.2, or you can come in 2 meters and go out 440.
You do that from your handheld?
Yeah. Yeah. But all that data is being routed through your repeater controller.
Yeah.
And it's also the same device then that is also providing that connection through a computer then out, or a connection out to the gateway, which brings you out to the internet. Okay, one of the criticisms in ham radio about D-Star is like, oh, it doesn't work without an internet connection. Okay, you know, and that's a misconception planted in people's heads. And I keep saying, well, first of all, it's still a RF repeater. You can still get on, use it as a repeater. If you have the internet connection, great. You've extended your range, you've extended your capability. If it goes out, it's not the end of the world. All right. And actually, there is a push within the repeater groups around here, the ones that have line of sight paths, to just get cheap Wi-Fi type links or microwave links or whatever at like 5.8 gigahertz and just do point-to-point linking as backup. So if you lose the internet connection, we could still have two repeaters actually connected together to extend the coverage. And this is one of those things where you can, in essence, extend the range of coverage beyond what just one single repeater would offer, all right, by having these hooked up together by a wireless backbone. So hams are doing this.
A number of sites, I think, out west are doing it. I mean, they do it as a matter of course for the 5 gigahertz links.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cameron here was involved with D-Star from Panama City.
Well, yeah.
Really?
Somewhere. Swam upstream. There isn't much activity. Yeah. But that's where I got into it.
Yeah. The ICON started off selling a 10 gigahertz link. That equipment is extremely expensive for what it is. And a lot of hams said, what am I getting for this here? You know, other than it says ICON. And they started buying a lot of these cheap 5.8 gigahertz radios, you know, and really for $300-$400 you can put up one side of a link like that. You know? So okay. So we have the typical way of accessing D-Star network through RF. The neat thing about it is, remember, we have digital data. Everything is now digitized here. So one advantage with D-Star is you can also take digitized audio, and you can also start sending it out through the same D-Star gateway connections here. So think about it, if you're traveling, and a lot of people travel in business, or they're in an area where maybe they're near a Wi-Fi hotspot in another location somewhere, or they're at home or whatever, but they don't have RF coverage, they can still participate in D-Star communications. They can dial into the same repeater, they can still talk to you, and everything is going through this here. So with a simple headset and a little adapter, it's known here as a DB dongle, which is basically just that AMBI chip and just a couple of interface parts, you can hook it up to your computer, go into a D-Star gateway connection on the internet, and away you go. And now you're talking just like you had a radio. Okay. And that's one thing that's actually quite handy for people like in the emergency communication side, where somebody may be at an EOC somewhere else, they may not be in RF coverage range, or maybe they're on travel and all of a sudden something happens. They can be part of the action. Okay. Another thing that's become quite popular with D-Star is to set up what they call a digital voice or DV access point. And it's essentially a slight variant of what the dongle was here. The difference is what it does is it just has, this is nothing more than a tiny 2 meter transceiver that is just sitting there just watching the D-Star communications at RF, just coming in and out, just takes that, converts it into just raw data stream, and pumps it out through your computer out to the gateway as well. I actually have a little bit different configuration, but I run a hotspot, as they call it, at my home. I took an old used 2-meter radio that's an I600 baud packet port enabled radio. Just bought an interface board, so it isn't this nice tiny little package, basically, but I do the same thing. I walk around with my handheld, and I can walk around the house or in the neighborhood or whatever. I go through my own hotspot. I got an antenna in the attic, and that's tied in to the computer and off to the internet connection, and away I go. Or I drive around, driving to work or whatever, I hit my hotspot as well. So I have like a little mini repeater-like functionality. So these are great, actually, if you wanted to set up an operation, let's say, like at a field day, or if you had some other special event, just put one of these up at a decent site, and now you've got, you know, potentially a couple mile coverage area where people could be walking around and doing D-Star activity.
But still only one person could use it at a time.
Yeah, it's a simplex connection. But again, with a repeater, I mean, it's kind of the same thing too. Or if one, you're only using one person at a time for a repeater.
It's a simplex machine.
Yeah.
Very low power.
Just low power. But like I said, I'm using the an old Yaesu radio. I mean, I could turn it up to whatever it is, 50 watts or whatever. I run it down to 20 watts, you know. Okay. This is akin to what I actually am doing at home. Like I said, just bought a used radio.
And I have a hotspot here, Satoshi.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There is a guy in Japan. His name is Satoshi. His call sign is 7M3TJZ. Okay.
People want to look at it. Pass it.
Okay. So this is just a slightly more modern version of what's shown in the picture here, but basically what you're seeing is taking a conventional packet-enabled radio, hooking it up to this little interface board, and then hooking it up to your computer, and that's what provides your connection out to the internet and does your routing from there. So this is your way of extending your reach or controlling, setting up a controlled area where you don't have a repeater.
Now, in your diagram, I see you have an icon value 2AD. But I've seen this picture to mean you could use any plain old radio you have at home and turn it into a D-Star radio?
As long as it has a 9600 baud packet port.
So this would be a way to have D-Star to, say, like a Yaesu 80 you have at home?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the handheld cross-banding with the analog radio?
No, this would be simplex. Okay. So, like, for example, my hotspot runs at 145.615. So my radio's running simplex D-Star 145.615, and this is just sitting there tuned to 145.615. Takes the stuff that comes out of the 9600 baud packet port, feeds it over in here into this board, which is then just converting it into the D-Star data stream, basically, just
so
the raw data
stream. Your DV mode on handheld.
Yeah.
Yeah, the end user has to have a D-Star radio.
Yeah. Yeah, this is basically just helping to extend the reach of a D-Star radio. This is that radio has not been converted to a D-Star radio.
Okay, the analog radio is an analog radio. So I'm missing how the D-Star bits, they come in as a modulated waveform.
Uh-huh.
And somehow they're being ported out to the 9600 baud as 1-0?
Yeah, actually what comes out of the 9600 baud packet port is really just essentially the audio.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the little node adapter that does the conversion. Okay, yeah. So that's basically, I can plug my speaker outputs into that as well. Then.
Yeah. This node adapter is actually serving as sort of the D-Star replacement of what your TMC would have been.
Okay. Which gets back to you use analog. Yeah.
Oh, so you couldn't use like an FT60 to use some analog handheld?
No.
No.
Okay.
No. There is Satoshi, the guy who built this adapter, he had early on actually a DV adapter, a digital voice adapter. It was one of his early projects. For whatever reason, he stopped. But the idea was to be able to actually generate the D-Star audio, okay, the formatted audio, and then run it into a 9600 baud packet port enabled radio and then transmit. He started that, he dropped that project, and for whatever reason, others haven't really picked it up. I don't know why.
Because you have to hack your radio and the bits to get that.
Well, no, actually, you just go into the packet port. Okay.
Well, there's three groups right now that are doing this. Satoshi, this guy named Fred, which is called Dutch D-Star.
Yeah.
And then another guy named Mark. And here I get them mixed up, either Mark Phillips
Mark
or
Phillips,
Mark.
Yeah.
But there's another Mark, too. There's two Marks.
Okay.
And Satoshi right now is making a finished board. You can send him in yen. It was, when I got that, it was $120. But now it's about $150. And you'll get a complete board kit, the whole thing. The other guys, you kind of still have to kit build it somewhat. And they're not, they have trouble getting some of the parts. But the Fred guy just today went and announced he's got new software that does a lot of new things. So it's a very evolving area that changes about every 2 months on some of this stuff.
Okay. Other people are doing these hybrid arrangements, basically taking those interface boards like you've seen there, taking old analog radios. Let's say if you actually had an existing analog repeater and you actually had all the duplexers, this is just an example of a duplexer and amplifier configuration that somebody used here, and marrying it up with an existing analog repeater configuration. So the key is really just moving that audio, if you will, that comes out of these boards, just moving it in and out of those 9600 baud packet ports. Or take two radios and do a crossband operation. It's another configuration here as well. But the advantage here is then you don't have to worry about having a duplexer, which is usually one of the most expensive things in the repeater systems there. So this is good for like an ad hoc repeater. If you wanted to set up something in the field quickly, you could do a crossband operation. Okay, now remember, everything going across from D-Star is digitized. All right. So one thing that's kind of neat about D-Star is that people run what are called reflectors. You have an email reflector for your club, right? You just send out a message and everybody gets it. Okay, a D-Star reflector is sort of the same concept. You transmit to that reflector, your transmissions are now going out to everybody else who's dialed into that reflector. So in many ways, it's just like a conference bridge, like you're making a conference call. All right. The only difference is this conference bridge is now worldwide. One of the more popular ones, the one that your Port C repeater is hooked up to, is Reflector 1C, which is like becoming the worldwide hotspot. And it is not uncommon. You're going to hear people from every country around. There's actually an interesting net on Sunday evenings at, I think it's 10 o'clock Eastern time, I believe. It's the Ozark Mountain D-Star Net.
It's an 8 now. They moved it
up. Oh, they moved to 8?
8 or 8:30.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Ozark Mountain D-Star Net, and there's this one woman, Connie, KB0ZSG. She runs a net and literally has check-ins from all over the world. Okay. I mean, it takes so
long to go
through.
And that's why they moved it up, actually.
Yeah. Because you have to take
2 hours.
Yeah.
So I'm just to do, hi, this is one of the period the end.
I mean, you're literally having people from Japan, from Australia, from, you know, places in Europe, and the U.S. or whatever. Everybody's talking together. But the neat thing about D-Star is because all your audio is digitized at the source, everybody's audio is decent quality. So everybody who's going in can hear everything just fine. All right. It isn't like, oh, he's dropping out, he's scratchy, you know, whatever. You're in there. So that's actually one of the neatest properties of D-Star is this ability to just have these reflectors, okay, these conference bridge arrangements here. Like I said, you can hit and talk around local if you want. The NCR D-Star, we run reflector 25B, which is where we hook up all the repeaters together, which is sort of our reflector, if you will, for just the local coverage here. And then we have reflector 25C, which is the one we use for our net, and that's intended to basically open it up at net time to anybody in the world who wants to dial in. And we've got people from Australia dial in to our net.
We have that Wednesday night at 9.
Wednesday night, 9 p.m.
And it's transparent. If you use our 2-meter D-Star, you're in it, because I handle it all in the background. It's 5 till 9, I switch it over, and the link is for an hour for us, and about 5 to 10, it switches back.
Okay. A lot of people like experimenting with D-Star. A lot of people have been concentrating on software development. People have been playing with a lot of digital technology. So I just found a couple of examples of where people are experimenting. One thing they were doing is this little TMCX is, I believe, now the product that MFJ is now reselling. They just started recently doing it. It was a little TMC kit. But here was a guy who built a little board as an add-on, daughter board basically. So you could do both ATRS positions with your TMC, and it could take the D-Star formatted position data when you have a GPS module either in your microphone or, like, I have an ICOM 2820 in the car. I have the module in there, and I'm sending my D-Star information. So it's basically just taking that D-Star format of the GPS location and just moving it in and sending it out. So here was an example of somebody built their own little board for that application. This was actually one of the first prototypes of what sort of became the DV access point, okay, was this little transceiver. They use this little transceiver chip, runs at low power. The only thing that's different about the DV access point is this experiment had that AMBI chip in there for doing the audio. The DV access point is just the radio portion itself. But this was a guy named Mo Wheatley did this work initially, and this was his original experiment. And he had it at Dayton a couple of years ago and showing it off at a D-Star forum. A lot of people are really good at writing software. I'm not. I'm an analog guy. But one of the most popular programs out there today for D-Star is called D-RAPS, which stands for D and star is backwards. Set of RAPS, S-T-A-R, going backwards. The guy Dan Smith, I think is his name, has done an excellent job in writing this program. But it's a general purpose tool. You actually have windows that will show up here, and you can see files.
Yeah, you can get bars or points.
Yeah. There we go. Okay. So basically, you've got your typical little file thing where you can just drag and drop files, move them around, ties it in with a map display, ties it in with a little chat window. Some of the people in the emergency comm side, they do a lot of work with WinWin 2000, or there's a new version that runs on the PC only that it's called WinMore, I believe, ties in. But basically, again, once you've digitized your information, you can now move it around within a computer and move it from one area to another. So he's done a lot of work in this. He's also done a lot of work in creating templates, basically, for a lot of the ham communication stuff, which has been popular for a lot of the emergency communications people. So, like the Marine Corps Marathon, for example, you know, that's one of the things where they have, I think it's ICES 213 radiogram, I think they use it in their applications.
He's talking about things. Wasn't it last year, Art? We had to use that?
I'm not sure what the map is doing on this side.
Yeah.
They've been migrating to that, using that form.
You know, if you've ever used the old ARRL yellow and green radiogram forms and trying to write by hand, you can do it all on your computer now. It's a file. Send it out over your D-Star radio and away you go.
Does it compute the check automatically?
I think it does.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. He's done a lot of work. This guy has really done a lot of work with this form stuff.
Yeah. If you don't need all those bells and whistles, there's another simple program out there called D-Star Chat, which is basically just keyboard-to-keyboard chat, just like you're IMing your friend. You're just IMing, but you're just going through your D-Star radio, because remember, you got that 1200 bit per second data port, okay? So you can just go ahead and do a keyboard-to-keyboard chat with that.
That's your cousin, Mark?
Yes, my cousin.
Yeah.
Okay. Especially in the EOC realm here, there's another program called D-Starlet, which is intended to just have a bunch of computers all networked together and everybody works from a web browser environment. But what they did is they just allowed you to just sort of bring in all this data together. You can now send it out, format it, if you will, in a way for doing D-Star transmissions. And basically it was just doing this client-server operation here. But this was intended like for EOC applications or other more complex applications for ham radio.
This is the guy that does the mannequin call sign site, 87Q. he got into it. He started very early on with this application.
And believe it or not, somebody's actually kind of done the equivalent of slow scan television. Okay, they just started taking little webcams, grab an image, compress the heck out of it to 240 by 240, and send it out over that 1200 bits a second, you know, link there as well. Or it also provides support for an ID1 if you want to do like live streaming or close to live streaming anyway at 128 kilobits a second. So this is just an example of where people are just playing and experimenting, and especially a lot of these people who are like really savvy in networking and software or whatever, they're coming up with all of these strange applications.
Yes. I just wanted to interject real quickly. I watched a presentation from the Atlanta group that was pretty active in D-Star. Mm-hmm. One of their guys was talking about, in conjunction with Civil Air Patrol, doing photography and then uploading the pictures in nearly real time through the ID1 128K.
That was an example I used in the second webinar that I did. You know, it was D-Star Goes Flying, basically, and just showing that. But that was an example of where you're threading together a lot of these, you know, readily available pieces of software and this technology, threading it together and coming up with a capability that has really just blown away a lot of the people in the emergency communication side.
Disaster, because right now Civil Air Patrol, I was a member of that shortly. In Florida, their capability is to go take photos from the airplane, land, upload them really quickly, and then the incident commanders get it, you know, an hour later. But with the ID1 and a ham in there, they can do it, you know, take a photo and nearly, you know, within a minute or two.
I thought the Air Force was buying them some pretty good sized aircraft and multi-spectral scanners.
They are. We didn't even have a 182 in our unit. We didn't even have an airplane. So if they are, don't send it to Florida now. I'm here. I'll fly it.
Well, I got a friend who lives in Florida. He's looking for a plane.
Yeah, I'm looking for a plane too. Yeah. Doesn't have to go so far.
Okay. And actually, believe it or not, D-Star will eventually be in space. There is a group in the Netherlands that is using D-Star as the backbone for digital voice communication and some of the data communications that they're going to use. But this time, have any of you worked amateur satellites?
Yeah.
Anybody done? Okay. You know, and they're all just your conventional analog, you know, 2 meter FM. I do. I work analog.
Yeah, satellites. Work with satellites.
Get work on ball research plan.
Okay.
I still can't hear too much noise.
Yes. Yeah. Did work until you retired last week.
Yeah. Well, I'm out there with my air antenna, and you know, got my stuff at home or whatever, you know. But I'm saying it's all just conventional analog FM stuff and whatever. This time, they're actually going to use just D-Star as the digital technology and actually port this onto the small satellite. The satellite launch was delayed. I think they originally were going to do it sometime in late 2010, and then it got pushed back. You know, it's not atypical for satellites, so now apparently they're looking at a launch sometime in 2012. So. And there was actually an experiment done a number of years ago with one of the guys who was active in the NTR D-Star, Mike, N3UC. Actually had a communication with this other guy, Robin, AA4RC. Robin is the guy that built that the DV dongle and the DV access point, you know, or cells that basically is this company. So they did a test, and they went through the old AO27 satellite, just did the D-Star RF stream going up, all digital data, just went through, came right back down again, and they had a QSO. So.
And the doctor ships advanced.
Well, you know, actually, it's a little bit more complex because, again, remember with D-Star, you have a very narrow band transmission, okay, which means that the frequency tracking, okay, is going to be more of a requirement. So it was something they had to keep tuning and adjusting, right? But I think it'll be interesting, actually, to see how this experiment goes on the satellite, because this is really where people need to move, is in being able to do this type of thing.
The analog users on AO27, including me at that time, were quite confused. Well, I knew they were doing it, but you just get this basically blank carrier, and everybody was cursing that it was a Mexican cab driver or something like that. Because you get a lot of those.
Are you going to start that business, Joe?
Running digital on analog satellite, most users were confused. They didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, and actually, if you listen to a D-Star transmission on an analog radio, what you hear is just kind of this, kind of a, like a raspy noise, just like kind of a noise. Yeah. Okay. So, a lot of people said, well, okay, so what's D-Star and why is this any better or worse than what we have today? So I came up with a couple of comparisons for D-Star versus Name Your Poison, okay? So one of the comparisons I had was, what's the difference between D-Star and just conventional analog FM? All right. So the one key difference, as I mentioned, was that D-Star is narrowband, 6.25 kilohertz occupied bandwidth versus 15 for conventional analog FM. If you want to do, you can with D-Star, you can do the 1200 bit per second data simultaneously. If you're going to do data on an analog FM, you're going to have to get a TNC, you're going to have to unplug your mic, you're going to have to send data. Okay. So D-Star does both. The other thing that you're getting in D-Star is the audio has forward error correction, okay, which is one of the key things that helps you ride through a lot of the dropouts. The interleaving, as they call it, is another one, too. When you start getting picket fencing, some of the multipath that occurs as you're doing that, this interleaving and forward error correction is the thing that keeps you from having a lot of the typical, you know, picket fencing dropouts and other annoyances that you get in analog FM. Okay. And like I said, we're doing both. Oh, a D-Star radio can actually revert back to being an analog radio as well. So you can still maintain compatibility. This was a... I'll try and turn this up here. I didn't think to bring speakers here. But I'm going to play this audio sample. Let me a little bit blind. Okay. So this was an audio sample where a guy just had a D-Star radio in his car, and he switched back and forth between D-Star audio and analog FM audio. He just drove out to a fringe area, and he said, okay, let me do a test. So this is what the difference is in performance between D-Star and analog FM.
Okay, I found a place to turn up. This is KC5ZRQ on digital. Can you hear me? Okay, I'm going to switch to FM. So let's go ahead and switch to FM. This is KC5ZRQ on digital audio. We're going to change over to FM.
That gives you an idea of the performance enhancement you get with D-Star with all that forward error correction, interleaving functionality. So you could still copy the FM station. It's just kind of weak. It's the frying pan noise or whatever. Okay. But that's just an example of the improvement in audio quality that's created by using this digital technology.
I'm going to call on that a little bit. There have been papers written about analog versus digital, most of them in the commercial world. The difference is, until you hit the fact that you're dropping more bits than you can compensate for your forward error correction,
true.
You're either 100% or you're not there.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you something, the human ear can pull out a guy pretty effectively if you're still within line of sight, much further down the noise than your analog. But boy, you hit that wall at about S9, a little less than S9, D-Star goes R2-D2, and you're done.
Yeah.
The other thing is, go around HamFest where four or five people are talking D-Star analog, and two people key up. On FM, they match. You hear both of them. D-Star, you can trace each other. So it's not all Skittles and beer, you know. There's
problems. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's true. You can have that problem, you know, with D-Star, like you said. If people stomp on each other, you know what I mean, you're not going to hear two people, you know, at the same signal level or whatever, you know, that you might be able to pick out one versus the other. It's definitely going to be one or the other. You do have that limitation with any digital mode.
Well, usually on the net, they pretty much demand that you set your radio to block if somebody else is transmitting.
Yeah, it's called busy channel lockout is what they call it. So basically, if the radio is active, there's somebody on there, and you try and key up, it won't key up until your radio goes quiet. Okay. Yes.
So maybe you can
see. Yes.
if you look at working at them, if you look at digital, I can go back to that wonderful man, Harry Callahan, who kept saying, man's got to know his limitations. Mm-hmm. You've got to know the limitations of the mode.
Yes.
It doesn't matter what you're doing.
Yes. Yeah. But again, you got to ask, like you said, you are gaining something, okay? But you're also gaining the fact that the audio is now digitized, which means you can do things with it that you couldn't do with analog before. So everything's got its good and bad.
I did use D-Star recently. I went to Memphis after not being there for 35 years. Want to know what the ham radio woman was doing down there, especially with the floods back in the day. Mm-hmm. And the guy down there, a local D-Star group, I sent him an email off his website, and he told me that. One thing I didn't know until then was, apparently the link between two sites, I had to use the L to link.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then you have to, after you've done that, you need to get rid of the L, un-L it after you've linked, and then drop it the same way.
Yeah.
And that was something that wasn't any of the books or articles I've read until I did it. But well, I saw four or five guys driving down the road in Memphis, and the only problem was I found out that's probably the most active ham radio in Memphis, except for their 220 analog repeater. They got four or five very good 2-meter repeaters, and nobody's on them, including one that was right across the street from the hotel I was in. But it was kind of neat to get in touch with the guys down there. They were warning the fact their only ham radio store closed about 6 months ago.
Oh, really? Yeah. Let me move on. Okay. So how does D-Star compare to things like Echolink and IRLP, which some people are familiar with here? Remember, like I said, D-Star, your audio is digital at the source. Unlike an Echolink, basically everything is still analog, and then it's only when it finally gets to the computer that it's now been digitized. That's great. I do Echolink. I chat with my friends once a week. You know, I've got a headset or I've got a mic and, you know, and the speakers. I'm sitting there. I've digitized my audio at the source. But it's another thing when you're driving around and you're hitting an Echolink-enabled repeater, and now it's analog FM with picket fencing noise and dropouts or whatever, and it doesn't get digitized until it actually gets to the repeater and then going out there. So that's the one thing, is that because of that, the audio quality can vary tremendously. So the advantage with D-Star is that audio quality is consistent. If you're in, you're in. Okay, definitely. That's the limitation of any digital system with forward error correction. If you're in, you're in. It's great. Everybody's got the same audio quality. Okay. But with an Echolink or IRLP connection or whatever, the audio can vary a lot. And if I've heard some really poorly set up Echolink nodes, you know, the audio link that they don't have level set right, or God knows what they've done, okay, you know, and you're just like, what is this? Some are great, some are just truly awful. Okay. And D-Star is not a computer-only application. It lives, it breathes within your radio itself. Echolink and IRLP are inherently just applications or utilities, if you will, that run on a computer. Okay, a lot of people are using APRS for a lot of applications in ham radio now, especially Marine Corps Marathon, other types of applications as well. But the difference is that at D-Star, your GPS position is just part of that data stream. You're holding up the radio with the microphone, for example. There's your speaker mic with the GPS receiver built into it. Every time he's talking, he's picking up the GPS signal. That data stream is being fed into that 1,200 bit per second data stream. It's right out. So every time he's talking, his position is being sent at the same time.
Okay. You're going to be the next boxing.
That's kind of cheating, you know, if you can see the guy on a GPS display. And, you know, I'll head him off at the pass, yeah.
Less than 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Better than driving by and saying hi.
Right. But the thing is, you know, with conventional analog FM radios, if you're going to do this, you got a GPS receiver, you got to have a TNC in between. You got to have something to take that digital data and push it out, as opposed to with D-Star, that's much more of a transparent operation. My 2820 in the car, like I said, the the D-Star module has a GPS receiver built into it, so I automatically have GPS positions, and I periodically send my position out, and I can actually go in through some of the other APRS networks that are available on the internet, and I can actually pull up and see where I went, you know, driving as well. So they do exchange that information.
We have GPRS running on our gateway, so that if you see our machine with a GPS-enabled radio, it'll show up on the APRS side as
yes.
well.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. There was a lot of criticism early on with D-Star, and that was, oh my God, hams, they came up with this cockamamie system or whatever. Why didn't we just do what they did in the public service community, which their following was called the P25 or APCO 25 standard for public service radios? Well, I got news for you. D-Star and P25 are actually, radio for radio, are actually pretty similar. They're both digital radios. But the only difference is that APCO 25 uses this IMBE vocoder instead of the AMBE vocoder. IMBE was just an older version, but from the same company, VSI. Okay. But if you look at the radios, what do you get? If you went out and bought a P25 radio today, all you're doing is you're paying a lot of money for a very dependable, rugged radio, but you're paying a lot of money, more than twice what you would be paying for a D-Star radio.
Much more.
Well, what would you say, Rick? $3,000?
I don't know. Motorola.
They're $3,000 to $4,000. Depends on if you get encryption with them and all the other.
Yeah. I mean, I think basically a P25 radio is plain vanilla. I think starts at probably about, you know, $1,200,
$1,500. There are P25 ham repeaters.
There are.
Not very many, but you find in the back of the late computer guys.
Chicago, I think, and the guy in Chicago is kind of really
into it. But, you know, radios aside or radio technology aside, the two technologies are actually pretty similar. P25 is also racing towards the same bandwidth, 6.25 kilohertz.
All right.
So they use the same vocoder. They're aiming to the same bandwidth. So what's the difference? Well, really the only difference has to do with higher up in the food chain, if you will, and that P25 and all the public service stuff, they want a very tightly structured hierarchical system. All right, you just don't arbitrarily pick up a P25 radio and say, I would like to talk to, you know, the EOC at the state, you know, in Richmond or something like that. You basically have to be patched in and given permission to increase your coverage area, if you will. Okay, they run a very tightly structured communications hierarchy, right? And that's fine for the public service community. They want that. They want to limit communications where maybe there's a fire brigade and they're only going to talk, you know, where the fire is at this current building, all right? But again, if you want to go to the next level, you need to seek permission, basically, to move up the chain there. After that, it's all digitized stuff, okay? So that works, that architecture works for the public service community. But if you look about ham radio, though, the thing about D-Star is it's a flat architecture. If I want to talk to anybody in the world, I can dial in their call sign and I can talk to them. Or I can go on a reflector and I can say, hello, is anybody out there? And the world can come back to me. So D-Star is this very flat architecture. Okay, any radio can talk to any radio, and that's the way hams operate. And that's one of the key differences. Okay, so cost of the radio aside or whatever, radio for radio, they're really pretty much the same. It's, the difference is really more in this higher level digital routing and architecture that they use. Okay, so in summary, actually did pretty good on time. Ham radio has really only just scratched the surface of using digital technology. I mean, we're starting to see some of it in HF. We're now starting to see the inroads here with D-Star technology. You're seeing it, you know, with the other HF modes, even the digital modes like PSK31. All right. There's going to be a lot more of this, so expect it to really start to move into ham radio, but it has so much to offer in capabilities as opposed to the analog modes there. So that's why I say D-Star really has much to offer ham radio. Okay. Yes?
You mentioned kind of taking other hands.
Yes.
Also using the dongle. Mm-hmm. At one point I was using a dongle and I was able to talking to my cousin out in California while he's sitting in the backyard, lounging in his hammock.
Yeah.
And that's pretty good for 2 meters.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, should play out
that as the servers and optical lines along the line.
Well, and that's what I mean. You can, you know, you can take advantage of gateway or internet connections when they're there. And people are like, well, this isn't the purest, this isn't ham radio. And I say, well, okay, so what is ham radio? You tell me, where's the formal definition? One of our charters as hams is to experiment with technology. So we're experimenting with it. You don't have to use the internet connection. You can do a lot of things if you want on your own. If people are playing with satellites, there's no internet connection, is there? But they're using ham radio technology. You know? It's up to hams, the individuals, and the creativity that they have to offer here, you know, as opposed to being what I'll call just the standard off-the-shelf appliance operator. You know, and I point this out to the people, you know, that they kind of, oh, I just want to stick with analog FM or whatever. And one of the slides I've put in other presentations is, why is ham radio or D-Star, why is it any better than the existing analog modes that are out there today? Because anybody can go to a store and go buy an FRS GMRS radio. It operates, you know, pretty close to the 440, you know, or in performance, pretty close to a 440 analog radio. Anybody can buy it, no license, you know. All you have to know is push to talk, release to listen, okay? This is where ham radio needs to step up to the plate and come up with technology that's more innovative and offers more, brings more to the table if we're going to stay relevant, you know, and especially in the public service community. Okay, any other questions? No? Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay.
To do that, and that wasn't like, how do I program my D-Star radio, which we can offer that assistance, but I think it gave you a lot of folks here more overarching what D-Star is, the technology behind it, and possibly where it's going in the future. And so we appreciate that very much.